Yeah, welcome to Core Volunteer Training. Core Volunteer Training is a program created to support our volunteers and CCL supporters, especially new and newer volunteers, to achieve your goals around climate advocacy. So thank you so much for being here this evening. My name is Tamara Staten, and I am CCL's Education and Resilience Coordinator. Okay, and with that, I get to introduce our speaker. Nate Abercrombie is our Conservative Outreach Coordinator at CCL. His role is to assist CCL in recruiting and activating the politically right of center volunteers to help us accomplish our climate policy goals. He hails from the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and he grew up doing outdoor activities like fishing, hunting, surfing. Any other Marylanders is in the crowd? Let us know in the chat if you're from Maryland, or let us know if you're a surfer, you're a hunter, fisher. Let us know in the chat. The time that he spent out on the water and in nature helped him realize how sensitive his local environment was. All right, Nate, take it away.
All right. Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here and hope that I can make you feel more comfortable in your abilities to communicate with conservatives in general about climate change specifically, and even more specifically about the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, or the EICDA. Our agenda tonight is relatively straightforward. First, I want to go over my general suggestions for communicating with conservatives and communicating politically. Second, we're going to talk about the aspects of climate change that resonate best with conservatives, so you know what to mention in conversation. Third, we will go over the ways in which the EICDA is a politically conservative policy. Then we will go over how the EICDA is an economically conservative policy. Lastly, we will hopefully have time at the end for some Q&A and discussion. So let's get started. All right, general tips for communicating with conservatives. There are a number of considerations to take into account when communicating with anybody, particularly those who may be outside of the group with whom you generally relate. Here are a few things to keep in your mind when you're communicating with those who identify as more conservative. Do your best to avoid lumping conservatives into one big group. People are conservative for a huge variety of reasons. It can be helpful to mention and cite institutions that they trust as a way of making your arguments credible. Whenever possible, speak political language that conservatives can relate to by using the same or similar words and phrases that conservatives use. Use symbols and imagery that conservatives tend to prefer rather than ones that might be a turnoff, and reference trusted communicators whenever possible. The first piece of advice is to not lump conservatives into one big group, or don't assume that all conservatives are the same. Here's a pretty extensive list before you of the different types of conservatives. You might recognize some of them or may be able to surmise what others are. You don't have to know each of them, but since you might be curious, a cultural conservative would be more concerned with preserving the values of conservative traditions. Clickbait conservatives are kind of those who are more like a product of the internet age. A crunchy conservative is someone who would be, environmentally and socially conscious. And like a paleo conservative is a nationalist and largely Christian conservative. I'm curious, like, do you guys recognize any of these in your life? Anyone you know who might be one of those? If so, tell us in the chat who you might know, friends, family, anyone who stands out as those. While it's not really important that you know or recognize each of these types, and labeling doesn't necessarily help in our communication efforts, it is important that the next time you try to talk persuasively to a conservative, you don't make any big assumptions about their beliefs. Helpful tip for communicating with anyone, really. You might think about it this way. Imagine a farmer in the Midwest and a business executive in Manhattan who both consider themselves conservatives. They might vote for the same people, but you can bet that they probably worry about very different things. This next tip is pretty straightforward. Speak to institutions that conservatives trust. Most of you can probably come up with examples of institutions in addition to those that are listed before you. But when you want to speak persuasively to a conservative, these institutions are important in two regards. First, you do not want to disparage or really speak negatively about these. It could very well cause a conservative to shut down and stop listening to you. Secondly, if you want to open their minds to climate change and policies that address it, cite ways that the issues will affect these, or mention times that people within these institutions have signaled their support for climate mitigation policies. On a similar note, mention trusted communicators, such as these individuals, whenever possible and organic in conversation. Talking about Republican political figures who had good environmental records is likely to make conservatives more receptive to pro-environment arguments. Like, for instance, of course, Theodore Roosevelt. He was a conservative Republican who is famous for his environmentalism and conservation. He created the U.S. Forest Service, founded the National Park System, and he placed about 10% of total U.S. land area under some sort of conservational protection. Another figure worth mentioning, maybe surprisingly to some, is Ronald Reagan. He went against his traditional anti-regulatory stances to help pass the Montreal Protocol, which was crucial to saving the atmosphere's ozone. This deal created the concept of emissions trading or emissions trading markets and market-based solutions to environmental issues. Arnold Schwarzenegger is a more modern Republican with a good environmental track record. He passed the Global Warming Solutions Act in California, which pledged to cut Californian emissions by 25% by 2020 through raising vehicle emission standards. In addition to this, he was a strong advocate for forward-thinking water management policies. And lastly, there's John McCain. He was an avid fighter for cap and trade on carbon emissions, having worked tirelessly to try to build a 60-vote bipartisan coalition to get it passed. Ultimately, it came up short, but it was crucial to pooling the Republican Party in the direction of market-based climate solutions. Another tip to bear in mind is that most conservatives speak a particular political language. This is important to consider when talking with conservatives or when writing anything that you hope will resonate with conservatives. And this is true in two ways. First, that conservatives use often completely different words, phrases, and terms from other people elsewhere on the political spectrum. And secondly, when conservatives hear various words and phrases, these will inspire different feelings or thoughts in conservatives than in others. So I have a question for you. Are there any words or phrases that you only heard said by one political group or on one end of the political spectrum? Or maybe it's easier to think of it this way. What are some common expressions that you've often heard coming from one group of people? If you can think of any, just let us know in the chat. Election fraud, yeah.
Big government.
Yeah, I like these are coming in. These are good. Lib. I'm going to keep going, but just for me, I can't recall a single time I've heard the term living wage come out of a Republican's mouth, just like I can't think of a time I've heard a Democrat say the phrase taxation is theft. Here's another example of words or phrases that might be used. What a conservative might call tax relief, a liberal might call a tax cut. Tax relief implies creating financial relief for people, and a tax cut implies cutting the services provided by the government. Political strategists spend considerable resources carefully picking words or phrases like these because they are aware of the effects that they have on people, and you should be too. And here are two other examples of phrases you'll only hear from one party or the other. What some people might call an estate tax, some staunch conservatives, in an effort to make the policy seem more unappealing, will call it a death tax. Now, I have another question for you. Can you think of any words or phrases that mean something totally different to one group from another? Maybe this is political, maybe it's social. Go ahead and share any ideas you have in the chat. While you're sharing ideas, here's one example. What about government overreach? For a more progressive individual, their mind might jump to reproductive rights when they hear that. But a more conservative individual is probably more likely to think of something like business regulation when they hear government overreach. So what about infrastructure? Someone who is more conservative often thinks of what is called hard infrastructure when they hear that word, like roads, bridges, ports, utilities. Someone who tends to be more liberal may be more likely to have a wider definition, often called soft infrastructure, that additionally includes things like childcare, public transportation, and other social services. The main point of all this is to show how meaningful your word choices are. When talking to conservatives, consider using languages that conservatives can relate to when it is comfortable for you. Additionally, try to avoid using languages that conservatives might find unappealing. Similarly, if you are making materials that use symbols and imagery, you'll want to consider how these will emotionally affect your audience. I'm not making a political statement with the above images, but I want you to think, if you had to use a picture in some sort of flyer about the First Amendment and the right to protest, which of the above two images do you think a conservative would be more naturally receptive to?
So you're asking the left image or the right image in or the flags? Yeah. So go ahead and share in the chat. Which one do you think would be more, would resonate more with conservatives? So lots of people are saying the right one, as opposed to the wrong one. No, as opposed to the left one. Okay, go ahead, Nate.
Yeah. And so guys, and lastly, in this section, I just have a few more general communication tips.
And that would be, let me just validate that. Yes, it is the picture on the right.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It is more. And do you want to say why, Nate, are you going to speak to that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so I think, the image of kneeling is, something that conservatives think of with, protesting, the flag and, you know, it's gotten contorted into also being associated with being against vets. And the image on the right is the American flag, which you will be hard pressed to find a conservative who doesn't like that.
Great. Thanks, Nate.
So lastly, in this section, just a few more general communication tips. Speak from personal experience and tell compelling stories. This is crucial to help you reach the emotional brain of the people you are communicating with. And if you have some stats on hand about a topic, be it climate change or the carbon fee and dividend, then you'll also be able to reach what is called someone's rational brain. Lots of communication specialists emphasize the importance of trying to get through to both of these parts of the brain, emotional and rational, because they are the two binary units that guide our decision-making. Additionally, avoid sensationalization, especially with conservatives, because many will use that as a reason to write off your arguments. And lastly, if you are a conservative, you should say it. It builds your credibility in other conservatives' eyes. Now, in order to speak persuasively and effectively about climate change to conservatives, you have to know the aspects of it that conservatives will actually care about. So here we will be going over the things you should be mentioning when trying to persuade conservatives of the seriousness of climate change. There are many aspects of climate change and fossil fuel use that lots of conservatives either don't believe in, don't think are serious, or just simply don't care about. So let's go over the points which will almost certainly resonate with most of them. These points to know are how fossil fuels and climate change threaten human health, agriculture, the great outdoors, the economy, future generations, aka their children, grandchildren, and all of posterity. First, conservatives are receptive to arguments about how fossil fuel use and climate change threaten human health. Like most Americans, it is news to conservatives that burning fossil fuels damages air quality so much that it causes between roughly 90,000 to 300,000 premature deaths per year in the US alone. Fossil fuel burning leads to increased rates of cancers, heart and lung diseases, as well as neurological diseases like Alzheimer's. You can also mention to them the dangers of heat stress. There was an infamous heat wave that hit France in 2003, and it caused an estimated 15,000 people to die in just 1 week. And events like these, sadly, are set to become more common. Further, extreme weather is something that is a huge threat to people in sensitive areas. For instance, Hurricane Ida is believed to have killed maybe more than 80 people in the Northeast last month, especially those in zones sensitive to flooding. Conservatives also care about agriculture because it creates jobs, it puts food in their stomachs, and because the profession obviously holds cultural significance. As climate change worsens, it threatens agriculture in a multitude of ways. Worsened droughts, more intense heat waves, less predictable weather, more crop damaging weather events, as well as plant pathogens that thrive in warmer climates and are expected to become much more common in the US as they move northward. As those effects compound, swaths of area in America that are currently supporting agriculture will not be able to in the future. The Midwest in particular is expected to be hit hard, as it could see corn production fall by as much as 75% and soybean by 25%. This will hurt land values, kill small town economies, make food more scarce, and make food more expensive. Further, it is expected that worldwide food demand will increase by 70% this century before it levels off. So we will need significant technological and labor shifts in order to feed everyone in a world where it is becoming harder to grow food. Now, this is an issue that you can be sure almost every conservative is worried about. So bringing up economic concerns is pretty sure to catch their ear. Studies have suggested that the U.S. economy could be hit hard by climate change. We may stand to suffer the second largest drop in percentage of GDP of any country in the world. That is in a moderate to high heating scenario. Being so large, we stand to lose a lot. It is thought that the U.S. could lose up to 1% of GDP growth yearly starting around 2050 to climate change-related losses. Our economy currently grows at about 2.2%, so this is a loss of coming up on 50% of our growth. That is an absolutely huge hit and will hinder our economy for decades to follow. Conservatives are also willing to engage in conversation about how climate change will affect the outdoors. By the way, outdoors is one of those words that will make them respond differently than environment. But many of them have hobbies, jobs, or entire lifestyles that are predicated on a healthy outdoors. They may be hunters or hunting guides, weekend fishermen or commercial fishermen. Maybe they ski, they hike, or they sell equipment that are used for both. They could hold jobs that are based in tourism or resource extraction that will be made more difficult as climate change worsens. Outdoor recreation contributed $459 billion to U.S. GDP in 2019, so it's really important to the economy. However, it is also important, the outdoors, because of its aesthetic, cultural, and ecological value. So rack your brain for facts about the outdoors and how it is being hurt by climate change when you're talking to conservatives. Lastly, the well-being of future generations is another major climate concern that conservatives have. Why do you think so many never stop talking about the national debt and the burden we're leaving to posterity? Conservatives are concerned with fairness and see using debt as sort of stealing from future generations and see it as all of us living above our financial means. This exact argument is applicable to climate change, that we are leaving a debt for the future. And I know of many conservatives who have been persuaded by this idea specifically. So we have gone over how to speak to conservatives in general and how to speak to them with respect to climate change. Now we are going to talk about the conservative elements inherent in the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. First, we will talk about the ways in which the bill is politically conservative. And in the next section, we will talk about how it is economically conservative. So, House Resolution 2307, the EICDA, or the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. It is the main policy that CCL spends resources advocating for. Because this is the policy that we want our volunteers out there pushing for, I want to go over it in depth. And I want to go over the things in depth that you can say about it that will convince conservatives of its merits. But first, the EICDA works by placing a fee on fossil fuels at the point of their entry into the economy, which is usually defined as the wellhead. The government then takes 100% of the revenue from the fee and returns it to the American people in the form of a check or dividend. Lastly, this policy is accompanied by a border carbon adjustment. American exporters are given a rebate on the fee so that their products are competitive in other countries, and international exporters are charged a fee when their products come into the U.S. so they don't have a price advantage. So why is it politically conservative? The answer is a lot of reasons. The EICDA doesn't grow the size of the government. It strengthens national security. It doesn't infringe on personal freedoms. It doesn't raise the national debt. And it isn't a so-called Trojan horse for socialism. The EICDA is a conservative policy in large part because it does not grow the size of the government. The administrative costs for collecting the fee and sending out the dividend would be extremely low. This process would require less than 2% of the fee's revenue to work. The structures needed to collect the fee are already in place through the IRS tax collecting mechanisms, and the structures needed to send out the dividends would be the same as how the Treasury sent out COVID relief checks. Military officials and national security experts across the board resoundingly agree that climate change is a serious threat to U.S. military stability and our nation's security in general. Rising sea levels threaten billions of dollars worth of military bases and infrastructure. Further, climate change will increase the frequency with which the military needs to perform foreign aid and respond to foreign natural disasters. What's more, reducing reliance on fossil fuels will free up supply chain resources that take up a considerable portion of military efforts in the field. There's a lot of time and energy put in to making sure fuels get from one part of the battlefield to another. So by implementing a carbon price, we can curb the worst of climate change and ensure that we aren't wasting precious military resources. Another conservative aspect of the SEDA is that it does not restrict personal freedoms. Some climate mitigation ideas currently being floated, albeit the more extreme ones, would like to do things like maybe restrict Americans' abilities to choose the kinds of cars they can drive, or maybe the food they eat, or even the products they are allowed to buy. The fee and dividend would address climate change and curb CO2 emissions without telling people how they can spend their money or what they are allowed to do by preferring the products and the businesses who are able to do it with a lower carbon impact. The ICDA is also politically conservative because it is not a policy reliant on raising the national debt, as I've previously mentioned. One of the main reasons you'll hear conservatives rail against government spending is that they are worried about rising debt levels, the federal government's ability to pay its loans, and how much interest it has to pay on those loans. In general, though, just know that it is hard to convince conservatives to support policies with big price tags. And it is even harder if those policies will be funded by borrowing. So thankfully, the EICDA is neither of those. And lastly, on the political front, the EICDA is a policy that isn't some sort of Trojan horse for socialism. Conservatives believe, frankly, that socialist societies don't work. So they are always on the lookout for socialist policies being pushed in the US. The EICDA is a market-based and small government policy. And many conservatives want to see climate action taken by policies like that. Part of its beauty is in its simplicity and in the fact that it is not currently attached to other bills with myriads of provisions or suggestions for economic overhaul. And this all makes it more appealing to conservatives. Okay, so now that we have gone over how it is politically conservative, we're going to get into how the ICDA is economically conservative. It is economically conservative because it creates jobs, keeps businesses competitive, puts money into people's pockets, doesn't raise taxes, and doesn't create any new regulations. Conservative preoccupation with the economy means that whenever policies are proposed, the first question they often think of is, how will this affect jobs? So one of the EICDA's main benefits is that it will create a lot of them. The renewable energy sector is more labor intensive than fossil fuels, and it creates twice as many workers per dollar invested. The slow price signal sent by a steadily rising carbon fee would allow time for workers to transition from fossil fuel positions to renewable positions, as well as for folks from other industries to enter the energy industry. The EICDA is also smart because it responds to international policies that are going to hurt U.S. businesses and make them less competitive. Namely, from the EU, which is the second largest economy in the world, and it is about to create a border carbon adjustment that would fine all carbon-intensive imports to its economy when coming from a country without its own carbon base. This means that the EU will be collecting a fee from American companies to sell products in that area. If the US implements our own carbon price and border carbon adjustment, then we can keep that money here and give it to Americans rather than allowing it to be funneled into the EU government. Another major economic selling point of the EICDA for conservatives is that it does not hurt the wallets of your everyday Americans. Extensive studies performed on the dividend show that the average American would actually receive more money from the program than they would lose from the higher energy prices and higher gasoline prices. This means Americans will have more money in their wallets that can be saved, invested, or put back into the economy in any way that they see fit. Further, the EICDA doesn't raise taxes or create any new taxes. And I don't know if you've heard, but conservatives don't really like taxes. And there are a few fundamental reasons for this that you should be aware of. Some only want to pay into the government programs that they use and feel it's unfair to pay into all of them. Some are opposed to the things that the government chooses to spend the money on in general. Sometimes, even if a conservative likes what the government is doing with the money, they might just believe that too much is being spent. And also, of course, conservatives place a high value on personal property, and they do not like the idea of being forced to give any of it to the government. Lastly, conservatives worry deeply about the government unnecessarily erecting barriers to conducting businesses and to making personal choices. These barriers could be something as simple as a business not being allowed to build a store within X feet of a road, or something like raising quality standards for a meatpacking plant. Conservatives are generally skeptical of the value added by regulations and often believe that the costs of regulations outstrip the benefits. Conservatives recognize that many businesses and people's livelihoods rely on razor thin margins and believe that increasing the cost of doing business or the cost of living results in completely unnecessary economic hardship. So the EICDA is great for the fact that it doesn't create new regulations, and it instead lets the market push companies toward carbon efficiency.
First of all, thank you for your presence, for your interest, for going out and building relationships and doing your best to relate to conservatives in a way that they will be able to hear you. So we do hope that you've learned something today and enjoyed yourself. And we have Nathan's email is on the screen, nathan.abercrombie@citizensclimatelobby.org. And I would also encourage you to reach out to the forums. We've got a couple other links. I just need to pull up my my presenter notes. We've got the Conservative Caucus, regular vanilla style, or maybe it's not a good metaphor, but we have the longstanding Conservative Caucus. We also have a new Youth Conservative Caucus, which Nate is heading up. And let's see, I'm working on getting those links in the chat, but I cannot talk and add links at the same time. Look at that, Nate's doing it for me. We also have some climate change links specifically around conservative and conservative information that he's going to throw into the chat for you as well. Thank you for being here, everybody. Thank you, Anna, for sharing the slides. Thank you, Nate, for your hours and hours and hours of preparation for our new conservative communication slide deck. And we will see you at a future party on Zoom. Good night, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram @CitizensClimate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.